Our gospel reading today comes from Matthew 16, verses 21 to 28. The Holy Gospel according to Matthew. From that time on, after Peter confessed that Jesus was the Messiah, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you. But he turned and said to Peter, Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things. There's actually more of that. Then Jesus told his disciples, If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life? The Gospel of the Lord. Jacob Blake is a beloved 29-year-old father, a son, a brother, an uncle, a cousin, a member of a community, a man spending his son's birthday with him. Our society values these things. There's just one thing. Jacob Blake is a beloved 29-year-old African-American father, an African-American son, an African-American brother, an African-American uncle, an African-American cousin, an African-American member of an African-American community, an African-American man spending his African-American son's birthday with him. And in our nation, that makes a world of difference in whether or not someone sees Jacob Blake as a person with the right to life and liberty, or a threat that needs to be contained, controlled, or killed. Whether he is seen as the dearly loved son of Jacob Blake Sr. and Julia Jackson, or as a dangerous felon. As the brother of LaTetra, Megan, and Zetha, or a danger to society. The color of Jacob Blake's skin changes how his humanity is perceived and affects the outcome of any interaction he has. The bullet holes that marred Jacob Blake's back, Officer Rustin Chesky, who was close enough to grab hold of Jacob Blake's shirt, shot 7 bullets point blank at Jacob's back as Jacob checked on his 3 sons in the back of his SUV. Officer Rustin Chesky shot 7 bullets that could have easily killed Jacob's children. Instead, Officer Rustin Chesky's bullets hit Jacob's arm, Jacob's kidney, Jacob's liver, stomach, small intestine, and spinal cord. The bullet holes that mar Jacob Blake's back, the wounds that paralyze him, the traumatic memories that he and his children, and indeed all his family and community, will carry the rest of their lives, they are the permanent marks of our society's racism. They are the permanent marks of our society's sin. The prophet Jeremiah tells us what side we stand on when people in power abuse that power to harm the community. Jeremiah called out the economic oppression, religious hypocrisy, and brutal cruelty of Judah's 6th century BC leaders and their followers. In Jeremiah chapter 2, God tells him to preach these words to the people of Jerusalem. I brought you into a plentiful land to eat its fruits and its good things. But when you entered, you defiled my land and made my heritage an abomination. The priest did not say, Where is the Lord? Those men who handle the law did not know me. The rulers transgressed against me. In 6th century Judah, that was, as RuPaul and the drag queens would say, being read for filth. Jeremiah tells us what side we should stand on when people in power abuse that power. We stand in opposition to those abusers and walk in solidarity with the oppressed. How did Jeremiah respond to abuse of power? Jeremiah got angry. Anger at injustice is a proper response. Jeremiah calls out the injustice and demands change within the systems of power that enable that injustice. Anger at injustice is a proper response. Jesus gets angry at injustice. Jesus publicly called out those oppressors of his time, "You snakes, you brood of vipers, how can you escape being sentenced to hell?" Jesus enters the temple marketplace and disrupts things there, overturning tables and calling it a den of robbers. Following in the footsteps of Jeremiah and Jesus means getting angry at injustice. It means calling out those who perpetrate it. It means disrupting those systems that benefit from and enable that injustice. It does not mean, as so many people in this country proclaim, ignoring abuse, corruption, and oppression in pursuit of a false peace that hides victims and their suffering. Too many times, when the sin of racism becomes too obvious to be ignored, when police officers ended the life of the joyful and beautiful 12-year-old child Tamir Rice within 2 seconds of pulling up to him and refused to offer first aid for 4 minutes, and they are not charged with a crime, or when police officers killed young, vibrant, and loving EMT Breonna Taylor, who was sleeping in her home, when officers broke down her door and started shooting, and those officers were not charged with a crime. Or when Officer Rustin Chesky shot 7 bullets toward Jacob Blake's back, bullets that his body shielded from his children who were in the SUV. Too many times, when the sin of racism becomes too obvious to be ignored, people take to the streets to protest, to call out the injustice. People take to the streets as prophets proclaiming the truth that racism is real. And racism is deadly. And racism has infected and now permeates every sector of our society. And too many times the response from that society is to call these protesters a mob, to decry their protests as violent and criminal, and to proclaim that the protesters are disturbing the peace. Jeremiah tells us that this tactic is not new. They have treated the wound of my people carelessly, saying, "Peace, peace," when there is no peace. They acted shamefully. They committed abomination, yet they were not ashamed. They did not know how to blush. How can protesters disturb the peace when there is no peace? There can be no peace while the violently oppressive sin of racism stains our nation's soul and harms her people. They acted shamefully. They committed abomination, yet they were not ashamed. They did not know how to blush. Even in the face of data and lived experiences shared and high-definition videos of this sin, those who hold the reins of power in our nation cannot even admit that the abomination of racism exists. They are not ashamed of their actions. They do not know how to blush. In response to Officer Rustin Chesky's actions, the police union put out a statement declaring that Jacob Blake had a knife on the floor of his car. They put out a statement declaring that he had a warrant out for him. They are not ashamed of their actions. They do not know how to blush. Now, we do not know all the facts in this case, but let us be clear. Even if Jacob Blake had a knife in his car, shooting him 7 times in the back at point-blank range was not justified. Even with that warrant, which has since been vacated, shooting Jacob Blake 7 times in the back at point-blank range was not justified. We don't shoot people in the back for having a knife or a warrant. The police union wants us to believe that Jacob Blake presented a real and imminent threat to the safety of the officers because there was a knife in his car. Interestingly, the police force in that same town cheered on members of an out-of-state armed militia openly carrying deadly weapons while breaking curfew later in the week. They did not shoot these weapon-carrying domestic terrorist lawbreakers in the back. They gave them water and encouraged their actions of violent intimidation. Kyle Rittenhouse was one of those gun-wielding people, and he was breaking the law by carrying that gun. He was breaking the law by being out past curfew. He was breaking the law, but he was not shot by the police. Later, he was carrying the actual deadly weapon that he had just used to kill two people and wound another. The crowd called out to the police that he was the shooter. Once again, he was not shot by the police. He wasn't even detained. Kyle Rittenhouse is a white lawbreaker who, when illegally carrying a deadly weapon he had just used to murder two people, somehow was not perceived as a threat by the police. Jacob Blake is black, and even though he did not have a weapon, the police found his black presence scary enough to shoot him 7 times in the back at point-blank range. There are 2 systems of justice in this nation, one for white people and one for black, indigenous, and people of color. This is a mentality as much or more so than it is a particular group of people. It is not a few bad apples. It is a centuries-thick shell of cognitive dissonance that prevents discussion of any hint of our nation failing to be perfect. It is why nearly a century of Jim Crow got one paragraph in my high school textbook, and that paragraph focused on water fountains, not lynching, not redlining, not voter intimidation, sundown towns, the history of segregated private schools and underfunded public schools, church bombings, and the myriad other sins whose legacy remains with us today. It's why MLK was transfigured from a man who spent much of his life being hated by the majority of the nation for his anger at injustice to the more palatable man who had a dream. Why the 5 years of the Confederacy are somehow vital heritage that are in danger of being erased, but 3 centuries of slavery is done, and we should get over it. Our nation is not perfect. Our nation had and still has a race problem. There are well-documented problems with racism and policing. Data shows us the reality. Politicians and their law enforcement agency leaders and their followers refuse to acknowledge that reality. And so our nation cannot change, cannot heal. We as a nation are not ashamed of their actions. We as a nation do not know how to blush. Truth matters. Demanding that our nation accept that truth matters. The people in the streets proclaiming that truth are 21st century prophets. Jeremiah never tells us that being a prophet is easy. His life reveals the burden of standing up to power. He too was threatened and harassed by the authorities of his day. In fact, they plotted to kill him. He too was beaten and imprisoned by the police. Jeremiah shows us that speaking truth to power can lead to suffering, because people who abuse power will not willingly relinquish that power. They beat and imprisoned Martin Luther King Jr. They killed him. They killed Medgar and Malcolm as well. This week, they killed Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum and maimed Gage Grosskreutz. Suffering, death, sacrifice, and resurrection are at the heart of our holy book, our theology, and our traditions. Jesus explicitly tells us that suffering, persecution, and indeed placing your body in harm's way is the price of discipleship. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. The narrative of death and life, Christ's crucifixion and resurrection, is at the core of Christian teachings. Jesus' death on the cross is the radical ending, and his resurrection marks the miraculous new beginning, the triumph of life over death and hope over hardship. The suffering we endure now will be rewarded as blessings in heaven, and our tormentors will be punished in the hereafter. This narrative has too often been preached in ways that lead to complacency and acceptance of the unjust actions of the wicked in this world. The transactional nature, doing good deeds to get me into heaven, as well as the, it will get better in the next world and justice will finally be served, sentiment in this reading of the crucifixion, it leaves me wholly unsatisfied. The Gospel of John tells us, for God so loved the world. But there is no love for the world or her people in a reading that tells people to simply endure oppression. Jesus tells us, love your neighbor as yourself. But there is no love of neighbor in a reading that doesn't encourage me to put an end to the suffering of my neighbor. There is simply self-righteousness and a willingness to tolerate suffering and oppression. The crucifixion can be read in other ways. Jesus as the role model for cultural transformation in this world. Jesus loved this world so much that he worked to change it, and the people in power killed him because of that. Jesus lived in this world. He loved the people in this world. He saw the suffering they endured. He got angry at the unjust systems and corrupt people that produced that suffering. He challenged these systems and their leaders publicly, knowing the suffering he would endure for that action. Jesus was crucified because the prophetic truth he proclaimed challenged the systems of power in his time. He took up his cross and died, not for love of self or to get into heaven, but for love of the people, to end their oppression, and to make transformative change. Taking up the cross in this way means beginning in a place of love for the people of this world and taking seriously their suffering. The work of bearing the cross is the work of bringing an end to the systems that harm. The burden we take on is the knowledge that in working for change, we put ourselves at risk of suffering and even being killed. When we view the crucifixion as a model for transformation, it is a burden we take up and place upon our own shoulders out of love. It can never be one we foist upon the shoulders of others. Here, let me help you with that cross by crucifying you. Your suffering now will help you get into heaven. Beginning in love means that we ourselves take on this burden. However, beginning in love does not mean we don't get angry. Jesus got angry at injustice. Indeed, anger is the proper response to injustice. Violence and killing are never the proper response, but anger definitely is. That anger fuels change. Jacob Blake's sister LaTetra had these words for us. I'm not sad. I'm not sorry. I'm angry, and I'm tired. I have not cried one time. I stopped crying years ago. I'm numb. I have been watching police murder people who look like me for years. I don't want your pity. I want change. In our reading today, Jeremiah is so angry that he chastises God for failing him and not protecting him from abuse and persecution. Why is my pain unceasing, my wound incurable, refusing to be healed? Truly you are to me like a deceitful brook, like waters that fail. The sinful wound of our nation's racism is injustice, and the proper response to that injustice is anger. I cannot help but be angry at the system that maims and kills members of our community because of the color of their skin, makes people in power perceive their very existence as a threat. I cannot help but be angry at the system that produced Kyle Rittenhouse and his mother. I cannot help but be angry at the system that taught a mother to give her child a military-style semi-automatic rifle, drive him across state lines, deliver him to a group of protesters, tell him that he was doing the work of God, and set him loose to hunt for humans to murder. I cannot help but be angry at this system that allowed police officers and the National Guard to let this gun-toting vigilante of hate walk away unchallenged from the scene of his crimes while the public called out for them to serve and protect. The proper response to that anger is to pick up our cross, call out the systems of oppression, and work to change them. How do we know what actions to take when working toward change? Kyle Rittenhouse loves police officers, and he decided to defend them from the oppression of the protesters. I could not help but hear parts of our psalm from Kyle's perspective. Vindicate me, O Lord, for I have walked in my integrity, and I have trusted in the Lord without wavering. Prove me, O Lord, and try me. Test my heart and mind. I do not sit with the worthless, nor do I consort with hypocrites. I hate the company of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. Kyle acted from a position of self-righteousness and judgment that viewed the protesters as enemies undeserving of safety or love. He acted as judge, jury, and executioner, and the police did nothing to stop him. They welcomed him as he broke the curfew law, and they welcomed the object he illegally carried, an object designed for the sole purpose of quickly and efficiently ending human life. Kyle took up not the cross of self-sacrifice, but the crosshairs of a gun. In doing so, he laid the burden of death and suffering not on his own back, but on the backs of the protesters. We are not a people called to vengeance. We are not called to violence. The burden of the cross does not lead us to kill. There is no love there. In our passage from Romans, Paul sets the standard for us. If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. No, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. For by doing this, you will heap burning coals on their heads. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Michelle Obama famously said, when they go low, we go high. Words that echo Paul's sentiments. This is not easy. Certainly for the families of Jacob Blake, Joseph Rosenbaum, and Anthony Huber, a desire for vengeance must weigh heavy on their hearts. The idea of going high is powerful, but it can be twisted to condone continued injustice and abuse. Why go high when they never will? Why go high when the abuse never ends? James Baldwin taught us that the defenders of unjust systems are also its victims, and his words help us understand why they fight so hard to defend something so harmful. I imagine one of the reasons people cling to their hate so stubbornly, he says, is because they sense once hate is gone, they will be forced to deal with pain. Recognizing their brokenness and pain can help us to respond with good, not evil. The cross and the crucifixion are a professing of love and a proclamation of change. When we follow in the steps of Christ, we are making a statement of self-sacrifice. Taking up the cross is not submission to violence and oppression. It is defiance of the power of that oppression to overcome the love that demands change. I'm going to say that again. Taking up the cross is not submission to violence and oppression. It is defiance of the power of that oppression to overcome the love that demands change. The power of this cross resounds clearly in the words of Audre Lorde. When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, then it becomes less and less important whether I am afraid. Taking up the cross is not intended as a way to erase or ignore past or present pain. It is a recognition that trauma persists and that we bear witness to that which is wrong. It demands that we acknowledge some things that are broken cannot be made right again. Jacob Blake and his family will never be made whole. The community that loved Joseph Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber will never be the same. They will always carry the pain of that loss. Taking up the cross means shouldering all these things because love demands it, and marching forward because that is the way we create change. Jesus tells us, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." We stand as witnesses to the sin of racism in our nation. Love demands we heed Jesus' call. What that looks like is different for each of us. It may be donating time, money, or other resources to anti-racist groups such as Black Lives Matter. It may be signing a petition, showing up at a protest, or contacting your elected representatives to demand concrete plans to increase police accountability and protect the public from racism and policing. It may be by voting and working to defend voting rights. It may be through social media engagement or putting up a sign in your yard that proclaims your support for anti-racist actions. It may be by pushing your employer to embrace anti-racist policies and encouraging them to publicly promote their support for anti-racist organizations. No matter who we are, I recommend that all of us continue to educate ourselves about the truth of our nation's sinful state of racism. I recommend that we all learn and practice how to have those tough conversations about race and our nation's enduring legacy of racism. When it comes to oppressions, silence equals death. Faith and love demand more. They demand that we take up this cross and transform our world. What are you going to do? Amen.